Welcome to Candid Catholic Convos, a program brought to you by the Catholic Diocese of Harrisburg. Our mission is to humanize the Church and help you to grow in your faith, love, and understanding. I'm your host, Rachel Trochet, a cradle Catholic who's only human and struggled with faith on more than one occasion. Each week, you'll hear engaging, down-to-earth interviews and actionable strategies you can implement into your life with ease to help you grow closer to God. If you're ready to open your heart and step fully into the person God created you to be, then you're in the right place. Let's get started. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Candid Catholic Convos. Last week, we celebrated the Respect Life Mass with Bishop Gaynor, participated in the March for Life in Washington, and spoke with two local pro-life OBGYNs about the options for women when it comes to their health. Today, we'll be continuing our pro-life conversation, specifically surrounding abortion, with Father Stephen Kelly, pastor of Holy Trinity Church in Columbia, an active participant in the pro-life movement, specifically as a volunteer with Rachel's Vineyard. I learned so much about the healing process for women who have previously chosen abortion, the options for families who feel they might not have any other choice, and I'm so excited to share them with you today. All of these resources will be linked in our show notes on Spotify, as well as our social media pages. Again, I want to extend grace to anyone who has been in this incredibly difficult situation before. I hear you. I see you. You are not alone, and you have options. His mercy is deep and wide. So without further ado, let's take a listen to Father Kelly. First, I want to thank you so much for joining me today and rearranging your schedule to make this happen. Would you mind telling me a little bit about yourself and your involvement in pro-life movement?
Sure. I got ordained in 2013. And in the beginning, I was kind of hesitant to get into a particular flavor of priesthood because I didn't quite know what direction God was going to call me within that. You know, some people go kind of get focused on Knights of Columbus, or they get focused on this thing or that thing. As far as kind of their particular area of interest or specialty, where they spend a lot of time beyond just the parish life. And it was not long after I got ordained that the invitation was sent out through the last email or e-digest to go to a priest training about Rachel's Vineyard. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. I'll go try that. And it was in York County, which is where I was at the time. So it was a matter of convenience. It was a beautiful weekend. It was at the old venue at the bed and breakfast there. I got to meet Dr. Teresa Burke, who did the presentation, and people who had been involved with it, and the other priests who had responded to that invitation. And I didn't really have a particular call again to pro-life, you know, as it was. I got called to be the confessor for a retreat that I couldn't really do the whole retreat. I said, well, that'd be a good opportunity to get my feet wet in this. And as it turned out, when I got there, the priest who was going to do it had just come back from vacation. He said, oh, great. There's another priest. I would really like to go home and rest. I'm like, oh, so I got really thrown into my first retreat, having never seen a retreat before, and just fell in love with that ministry. Dealing with the difficulties of women who had all these negative repercussions that they didn't anticipate, and the struggles and the sufferings that they didn't anticipate having, you know, and expressing their frustration with the lie that they were told that when they get an abortion, it undoes that. It's like an undo button that restores you back to that situation you were in before, and you go back and live your life on this alternate reality where this pregnancy didn't happen. And that's not at all what the reality is. I got signed up for the next, you know, I was called to do the next retreat, and the one after that, and the one after that. And I really And as an assistant, it's kind of easier to get away, assistant pastor or parochial vicar. So I did a lot of the retreats, and I mentioned to some of the retreatants I was at the last retreat that this is being part of this ministry of these people who are suffering so much really has flavored my own priesthood in this real love for the suffering who are dealing with the consequences of their sins, and to be the instrument by which God extends his mercy and forgiveness to the people who have a difficult time believing that God wants to forgive them, and be able to move forward in that divine mercy. So that's kind of how I got involved in the pro-life ministry, is kind of from the other side, is that I saw all these victims of having gotten abortion, men and women, and thought, I'm glad that the church has this ministry to reach out to these people who are hurting. Why can't we go upstream and prevent them from being hurt and broken by abortion in the first place? And so my first foray into pro-life ministry was really aimed more at the mothers rather than let's save the children, which is of course a huge part of it. But you know, the angle, you know, the way that God led me into it was let's save the women from all of these consequences that I've seen that they suffer from over the years that I've been doing this ministry, that I've been blessed to be part of this ministry. So that's kind of how I got here.
That's wonderful. And you're right. I like that logic of, you know, loving the suffering where they're at, but also working to prevent the suffering in the first place. I think that's beautiful. In our last episode with Drs. Manning and Whitaker, we talked about this from a scientific standpoint, but could you talk to me a little bit about what the church's stances are on when human rights actually begin?
One of the difficulties with trying to find a reasonable point for the defensibility of abortion is to try to find a line before which it's not a person and after which it is. And every point has every point breaks down. Every theoretical white line or bright line breaks down until you end up tracing all the way back to conception. You know, whether it's you try to say it's the quickening, whether you try to say it's birth, whether you try to say it's, you know, whatever developmental stage, there's always some logical failure until you go all the way back to conception. So it's by logic that we get to the point. So you really have to not do anything to offend the reasonableness of human life beginning at that point. You can't deliberately act against the good of a human being at any stage, all the way back to conception and all the way to natural death. That at every point along that way, the human rights of that person prevail against any choice made against those rights, which, of course, the first of which is the gift of or the right of life.
We've been hearing a lot about, you know, that argument, my body, my choice. Where does that fall with being pro-life and being?
I can understand that we have this desire for autonomy. It is one of our fundamental rights, just like the right to life. But of course, the right to life trumps the right to autonomy because right to life is that first life. You have no autonomy if you're dead, if you don't have life or you're not a human being. So you have that right to autonomy. The problem comes in when rights of different people conflict. You know, I have this right, you have that right, and then you have to decide or determine where the point is where those two rights meet. The my body, my choice, again, like I said, is a right that has to be secondary to the right to life. As human beings who are material and spiritual, we have a much easier time dealing with what we can sense, what we can see, hear, taste, smell, touch. And so a person that we, a person that we can see tends to have a greater immediacy to our sensibilities than someone we can't, right? And so it's easier for us to defend the rights of someone that we can see than the rights that we can't. And so it becomes difficult because my body, my choice, you know, somebody saying that, that makes sense. You know, there's this sense of, I want to be autonomous to my own body, right? I don't want people making decisions about my health and my body. I can understand that. But again, the right to life is prior to that. But because it belongs to somebody that we can't see or doesn't look like a person necessarily at every stage of development in the womb, it's harder for us to assign that right. It's harder for us to conceive of that, no pun intended. But that right is there nonetheless. If we're going to, again, if we're going to take the reasonable conclusion that you can't draw a bright line anywhere after conception, well, then that's where those rights begin, and that's where we have to assign those rights, including the right to life. So my body, my choice, has that working against it as far as it competes against a higher right by somebody else. And also, as much as I would love to claim that bodily autonomy, it's not an absolute right. If, you know, a couple of years ago, I got diagnosed with psoriasis, which is fortunately with medication, it's being managed very well, but it was still a huge pain before it was diagnosed. It was it was kind of disfiguring and humiliating. I didn't choose that. It wasn't my body, my choice, right? If I'm in an accident where I become a paraplegic, that wasn't my choice, but I don't have the right to go to that person and say, you didn't have the right to take that from me, right? It happened, and it's there, and that's what it is. And so our my body, my choice has qualifications and conditions and limitations to it. It's obviously not an absolute thing. You know, I can't take my body and do something else to somebody else's body, because then that violates their rights, right?
Right.
So the same thing to the unborn. You can't just take your body and do something to somebody else's body, even if it's in your body. That violates their higher rights than just bodily autonomy, such as the right to life. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. With the women that you've worked with and the families that you've worked with at Rachel's Vineyard,
yeah,
have you seen that abortion was the answer for traumatic events such as rape or incest?
It was the answer that was provided to them. But like we said before, that's a lie. That's this mirage or this, yeah, mirage. It's this illusion that you undo and then go down this other reality where that didn't happen. That doesn't work that way, because everything that happens to us is remembered by our reality. Our person, our body remembers these things. So if you have an assault and an abortion just adds another assault, another trauma to an existing trauma. How is that better? Right. You know, this isn't two negatives make a positive. The child is not the problem. The situation is the problem. You have to deal with a situation that doesn't include killing the child. That's, again, never going to be a successful part of a solution. It seems that way because you want to do the undo, because you don't see the child as a person. And unseen means it's easier for us to deal with abstractly and dismissively.
Right. Like, and if it was a 3-year-old standing in front of you, it'd be different.
Right. That it's not a reality. And that's what people have to do. They have to pretend. They have to compromise their reason to say, I can't accept that this is a person, because then that means I can't do this thing to them. And throughout history, whenever you have a controversy about who is a person, it's always about denying rights to certain persons, whatever that group of persons might be.
That's a very concrete way to think about it. Building off of that, have you seen that abortion was the answer for someone who didn't want to bring a child into poverty or risking abuse?
It bothers me when I hear somebody use the argument for abortion that I didn't want to bring a child into this world. How could I allow this child to enter this world? How could I have a baby into this world? The baby's already in this world. when you're pregnant with them, when it's in the womb, it's already in this world, right? An abortion doesn't prevent the baby from coming into the world. Abortion doesn't prevent. Abortion stops. Whatever can happen to that baby, abortion is the worst thing that can happen to that baby. So you're not doing it any favors. You're not doing him or her any favors by killing it before it even experiences anything of the world that is good. So no, that's not a solution. Yes, this world is a mess. This world has always been a mess since Adam and Eve fell from the garden. And every age has had its difficulties. And this age is as good and as bad as every other age as far as its right to have children. And how is the human race going to continue to a better time if we abort the next generation? Right. So we want to have children born who have hope, who have possibility, who have creativity, who have the gifts that God is giving the world in this time. Like God has a plan for the salvation of the world, and that child's gifts are part of that solution. We are stewards of that person with those gifts to bring them up, to allow those gifts to flourish for the good of the world. And so if you want the world where you're not questioning whether you can bring a child into this world, then let that child change the world.
I love that. One of the main oppositions to the pro-life movement is that the church and pro-lifers only care about the baby. Essentially, we're pro-birth. And we had already talked about this a little bit earlier, but could you elaborate on how that's actually not the case? Like how the church is involved from the womb to the tomb and other resources that are available for women facing an unwanted or an unexpected pregnancy?
Yeah, that's easy. Now, the difficulty, I should say, I'll start off with this. The difficulty comes from the political standpoint, which is a lot of the social support legislation that's proposed has all kinds of dead weight to it that are problematic for our faith, for the genuine flourishing of people and families. And so we stand against that, those pieces of legislation. The good that's in there is good, but we can't vote for the legislation because it also passes things that we can't consent to. So the criticism of pro-life people is that, yeah, we want to end abortion, but we don't want to pass the legislation that will support the families who keep their child, the families that are struggling financially and need more social supports as far as government money and this and that, that will help them choose to have their child and support them throughout their child's life with all these, again, government resources that will enable them to flourish in those difficult conditions. So that's where the "you're just pro-birth" kind of comes from, because we don't have a reputation for supporting the social legislation, I guess you could say, socially minded legislation. The reality is that, of course, we celebrate life, we welcome life, and I think one of the great example, there's a organization in Colombia, which is where my parish is, and it's the remnant of St. Joseph Hospital, and they've been very generous. For some reason, they chose Colombia to invest the funds that they got from the sale of the hospital, which, of course, is substantial. And they have been very generous. And they recently opened what's called St. John Newman School. And it's not particularly a Catholic school. It's a daycare and nursing nursery and a preschool. But they also do family financial planning, family meal planning, financial crisis management, how to find resources. So they do all these things that help families flourish. And they do it at a very low or no cost from their own means. So I remember being at the dedication of the building when they were starting the building of the school. And I said, this is a great example of how Catholics are not just pro-birth, but pro-life, pro-family, giving families the resources to flourish and be successful. It doesn't have to be the government that comes in and saves the day. The government is not always the best answer to every problem. This ministry, this school, this Catholic outreach is a great example. Is a great example of the Catholic vision of helping families to flourish in a very pro-life way, allowing them to accept life and to accept the difficulties and the opportunities and challenges that come with having a young family, and maybe even themselves not having the experience of having coming from a good family, but they want to change the trend for their children and to be a better family than they came from. So there's all this wonderful, and that's just one example. There's pregnancy centers who, you know, all over, pregnancy centers all over the place. And many of them have good connections with the Catholic churches and organizations around the area. And they do a lot to promote young families and life, you know, giving them diapers and carriages and all these things that are expensive for young families. So there is this great promotion of the needs of young families and young people who, to accept new life into their life and to, again, to flourish. The message that you have to have an abortion to flourish is very insulting to women, I would think. You can't go to college and have a baby too. You're not capable of that. So if you want to go to college, you have to abort your kid. Like, what kind of positive affirming message is that? The message that you can do both. You can be a great mom and a great student. How empowering is that? That's, I believe in you and I'm going to help you reach your goal. We're going to be here. We're going to help you. We're going to teach you these things that you need to know. We're going to hook you up with resources and the community and yes, government programs too, that may provide assistance for you to be able to do the things that you need and want to do. We talked about
Rachel's Vineyard earlier. I understand there's a project, Rachel, as well. Right. What are the are difference? They are they yeah? What are the, what's the difference? Are they related somehow?
They're really only related in the sense that they both took this image of Rachel from the Old Testament, who was this maternal figure for the people of Israel. And there's a line, I think it's from Isaiah, where the people of Israel, Jerusalem specifically, were being marched into exile. And the line in the scriptures is that Rachel weeps for her children are no more, right? Because Israel, Jerusalem is being emptied of its children. They're being sucked out and taken away to Babylon. So they both took that like maternal pain of losing their children. Project Rachel, which was the later development, is more of a network for contact. People struggling after an abortion can have this number to call this network. They talk to somebody who supports them and asks them who they would like to talk to, where they are, what kind of their immediate need is, as far as who to connect them to within the network. So it could be a counselor, therapist, maybe police, ambulance, healthcare, could be priests or whatever religion they might be. I think Project Rachel is specifically Catholic, as far as itself, I'm sure it ministers to whoever calls. So having already been part of Rachel's Vineyard, I accepted the invitation to be one of the priests involved in Project Rachel. When somebody calls, they try to match the contact that the network connects them to within their geographical area, if the person is willing to provide that. One of the connecting points for Project Rachel is if somebody is willing or ready to go to a retreat to face the struggles coming from their abortion, then that's the person who Rachel's Vineyard is perfect for. Like, sometimes that can be too big of a first step. Rachel's Vineyard is that, like, Monday, or I should say Friday afternoon, Friday evening to Sunday afternoon, where you deal with the trauma of your own choice to get an abortion, whether you felt pressured to do that and you lost that sense of autonomy. I love the Dr. Burke's book, where she kind of lays out the foundations of Rachel's Vineyard. Is called A Forbidden Grief, because in the world's view, you chose abortion. Abortion has no negative consequences that the modern medical psychological community is willing to acknowledge. So you're not allowed to grieve your abortion. So a Rachel's Vineyard takes the exact opposite approach. It invites you, and it kind of sets the stage for you to grieve your abortion, what you lost, the difficulties that came after that. Sometimes women have a real difficulty connecting and bonding with later children after an abortion. Sometimes I encourage anyone to read Dr. Brooks' book. Sometimes it can be difficult to get a hold of, but she outlines all kinds of things that women have suffered. Difficulty with certain songs, because it was on the radio on their way home from their abortion, or on their way to the abortion. Certain kinds of days, because that was the way the sky looked on that day. So how that's the relationship between the two ministries, is one is kind of a first step, and one is more of I've dealt with this a little bit and I'm ready to really heal and move forward.
We've unfortunately run out of time, but if you'd like to hear more from Father Kelly, you can find the rest of this episode on Spotify under Candid Catholic Convos and listen anytime. Or you can visit our website at hbgdiocese.org.
Thank you so much for listening. Our goal at the Diocese of Harrisburg is to walk with you on your faith journey. So if this episode resonated with you in any way, the easiest way to show your appreciation is by sharing this program with your network or by leaving a review on your listening platform. You can also support us financially by making a donation online at hbgdiocese.org/DAC and clicking the Make a Donation button. Thanks again, and we'll see you at church on Sunday.